You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host for this evening's show, Craig Fowler, and I'm joined in person in Ball Green Gardens by Tony Anderson, the man who owns this place.
Don't tell everyone my address, please.
I didn't say the exact.
I anyone's going to be arse queuing up inside my house. What are you up to, Tony?
What are you doing tonight? I'll go to Tony Anderson Street and see if I can see him. Yeah. And Duncan Mackay.
I cannot wait for Tony to get papped. By photographers. That's him there.
It's nice to be back.
A view for the Terrace star Tony Anderson seen here taking out his bins. Yeah.
But he is naked, so there is something in that. It's nice to be back. I don't think I've done a Monday in a while after screeching into the new season doing non-stop Monday episodes. I've been off for a while. I've been out gallivanting.
Yeah, I've not done too many recently as well. I've done one, Ewan and Joel, a couple of weeks back, but we've had to do a few more ones over Riverside, which is, it's fine. It's good as a backup, but it's not as preferred as it is when we're all in the same room and can really bounce off each other. And Duncan, you've barely done one of these in ages.
I know. I'm trying to think. I actually think when the last time I was in person. It's exciting.
I was in the desert during the week. I ended up doing, I was on quad bikes with my 68-year-old mum in the desert, which was a surreal experience.
And I was in Ball Green Gardens looking after your cat.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have our crosses to bear.
Don't give you either looking after a cat or in a desert.
No.
Okay,
I didn't do anything this weekend. I don't know.
But right, let's get to the.
You've just been to the dentist, though.
Oh yeah, I've been to the dentist. That's a huge,
worst thing in the world. I think, in my opinion, I hate it.
I had to reschedule a dentist appointment because.
Oh, that's the biggest mistake I've ever heard in my life. That'll be 6 months later.
Exactly. It was when I was in Florence, so I was like, I have to reschedule this. I was like, okay, next one's in January.
Yeah, yeah. I done it when he was hungover. Bumped it. They had to get it for 5 months. And that's a very expensive drink for your teeth.
But also at the same time, you're putting off something you don't want to happen quite a while. So,
maybe lose your teeth. It's not that great.
No, it's a no. Right, we've got six games to get through and...
Talking of losing teeth.
what a cracking weekend it was in the Scottish top flight. 29 goals in total, which equaled the record for the most goals in a single match day in the Scottish top flight since league reconstruction in 1975.
Ooh.
Wow.
And let's start with the game. Who had the least goals? McDermott Park. It may have had only three, which made it the only game.
Only three.
Which made it the only game which didn't have five or more. But it certainly was, I would think it has to be said, the most eyebrow-raising result of the weekend. Although, considering Rangers' recent form, was it?
You could maybe say that. And then you see that St Johnstone are starting with Elliot Parrish in goals. Mm. And then
that became a problem later on.
Yeah, and then suddenly I'm like, well, this is going to be Rangers by five. I don't think this is going to be particularly exciting. And then Rangers did what they do best under GBV at the moment, and they stunk the place out.
Yeah, the first half where they were pretty dominant, but didn't get their opening goal. And then James Brown, Tony, Could you ever have imagined James Brown would score that goal as his first ever goal in professional football?
James Brown has never dreamt of scoring a goal. That's how boring he is.
Yeah. I mean, I was absolutely jaw on the floor. Could not believe it. Fair play to him, James Brown, because, I mean, the stick I've given him personally has been non-stop, and it's mainly to do just... It's just... He never comes across... Just when it said his first goal in professional football, then my jaw came back up, and I was like, that's... I didn't know that, but that sounds... So James Brown. Of course, he's never bothered kicking a ball in the net before. He's about 25. There's goalkeepers that have scored, sir. But yeah, what a way to do it. It's an absolutely, it's a really good finish as well. It's easy to criticise these ones and say, oh, he just hit it. Mm. But I think there's a bit more to it than that. He flicked it up. He's got his eyes on the ball and he catches it really, really well. And it screams into the net. And one of the cliched ones, but if there was two goalkeepers, they wouldn't save it. They would. Nearly every time with that, there are two goals. No goals get scored, but it was a great goal, nonetheless. Please for him anyway. Please for him.
Yes, and it helps the Johnson on the way to victory. But they were certainly needed that second goal, due to, as we mentioned, Elliot Parrish being in goals, because he makes a hash of James Tavernier's ones. I know he sees it late, but
he
never looked good at any point during the game. He was just nervous every time the ball went near him.
But it was helped by St Johnstone scoring their second, and that was a combination once again of Stevie May and Nicky Clark, who are becoming one of the most potent strike forces in the league,
so
somehow.
It's Stevie May 3.0. So yeah. Stevie May 1.0 was his first stint at St Johnstone. Stevie May 2.0. Was the injured,
bad period.
The bad period and everywhere else. And then 3.0 is just incredible. Like, he's just even yesterday, like, is defending from the front. Like, he's so energetic. I don't know where it's come from, because he was injured and so broken down for so long. And now he's just got this new lease of life, and he's doing stuff like putting in perfect balls for Nicky Clark to seal a famous victory.
It was a really kind of cool finish.
Absolutely.
But also cool celebration for Clark as well. And it just seemed like, I do this all the time.
I don't know what.
No, you don't. What would you absolutely do not.
I was trying to work it with the hand gestures. Well, I thought he was doing a badly done love heart. Like Di Maria does. But then I realised he was doing something else. So. You say it's a cool celebration. If no one can work out what you're doing,
no, it was,
is it?
I didn't mean the hand gesture. I just meant the kind of way he reacted. It wasn't like the kind of sprinting off, screaming type of thing. It was just kind of... It was like a forward who's like, yeah, I scored goals.
It's the classic finger wag type one.
It's a forward who's done his research on Borna Barisic's lack of awareness.
Wow. That's now a constant theme for Barisic. I mean, I really do want to come back to me and Clark, but... Barisic not being aware of people coming on his blind side. He's up
not
there,
even
the
that
worst.
Not even that much of a blind side either. Yeah. Like, he was right next to you a second ago.
And he just totally switched off. And it must be getting... What's Yilmaz done? What's he doing?
He got injured.
Because he got in the team recently, and did he not do quite well?
He went off.
Was it the Champions League game he went off? It was. Yeah, he got injured again.
Because like Barisic... It's starting to get to the stage where I used to always think that even on his bad days, his deliveries in a Rangers team would outweigh any of his negatives, because they get the ball in those positions so often that his amazing delivery would supersede any of the other problems. That's starting to run low, and it's starting to really balance out. And like the amount of goals he's conceding is balancing out how many he's assisting. That's not really great when you have the ball for 75% of the entire game. I didn't get to read. I really wanted to read that. Like the Courier, was Eric Nicholson done a big piece on May and Clark? And I wanted to read it before coming on, but I missed it. But I was going to ask you guys: Is it these are both always been known as intelligent players? Like both quite intelligent strikers. Certainly Clark, I think his movement's always been good. The way he drops off is good. He knows when to make runs. Maybe at Dundee United, he didn't score enough goals, and there's an element of Shanklin didn't get a lot of goals and the styles of play that they got in. So maybe we were a bit quick off the mark when we were criticising the Clark, because now it's some interest when you get two strikers who are very intelligent playing together. Suddenly they enjoy themselves a lot more because they know they're going to each make the right decisions and they're going to get lots of chances. So even if they aren't as deadly as other strikers, when you put them together, they make so many good chances because of how clever they are. They must love playing with each other.
I think they're pretty complimentary. I don't think we were necessarily down on or wrong about Nicky Clark. I mean, he's proven himself not he's had numerous chances to prove himself, and I think he's
got three goals now already.
It's like the ball were playing money for him, and it's actually saved their season.
So I'm going to admit, I was certainly quick off the bat saying that's pish.
I'm completely flummoxed by how he's done, because I just saw it as one of these Dundee to St Johnstone, you know, people that go on the road and it doesn't really do anything and you weren't expecting, but it's worked out an absolute treat for St Johnstone so far.
And like Fuller was saying last week, I listened to the podcast, so I was aware that none of this is making sense, because Davidson, it wasn't being lazy at the start of the season when a lot of us were saying that St Johnstone would go down. It wasn't just based on the performances of last season. It was the performance of last season coupled with the work done in the transfer market.
Who left and who came in? That is not a like-for-like replacement.
So, like, that was what was... It was a more rounded thought about why they would go down. But it's not making sense. But the thing is, now they're getting stronger because now they're getting Witherspoon back. Carey's back fit. So now you're looking at now the squad's starting to look, and me and Clark are this port. Now you're thinking, well, that's fucking good then.
Witherspoon was the person I was going to bring up as somebody who's coming back has also really helped him as well. Like, he came off the bench against Hibs.
This is his first start.
He came off the bench against Hibs and showed his worth, and he also did the last week as well. And it's good to see that he doesn't look like he's lost anything for that year out. He just looks like David Witherspoon again. I suppose when he never really had any pace to lose to begin with, that's always going to be a benefit when you've had this knee problem. But he's still that technically great player. He's still got that kind of creative outlook. And they needed somebody like that because, as we've kind of said, the guys that they brought in, Carey being one of the examples, haven't been as reliable as David Witherspoon was in his St Johnstone pomp.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, now you look at the Carey, Witherspoon and Hallberg goes for... They had, like, the most work... I mean, they're Ryan McGowan in fucking midfield recently. So they went for, like, a very, very workman-like midfield to now quite a sexy midfield where everyone's, like, sort of quite technical with the ball.
Surely sexy St Johnstone... Well, they can't be Brack as long as James Brown's in the team, but if he scored goals like that, it could be.
But you know what I mean? It's like, Witherspoon's
unlikely
a very...
Unlikely sex symbol, St Johnstone.
But Witherspoon's a very technical player. Always, as you see, didn't have pace. It's all about the roll of the foot. With the release of the pass, the use of the outside of the foot was always a popular one for Witherspoon. Carey's all about technicals. It's just a wand of a left foot, really, and there's not so much going on. And in Hallberg, yeah, he works hard, but I've always looked at Hallberg as a footballer when he played. So now you've got like a midfield three of where now you're thinking maybe there's a defensive lack. So it's went like the full, in like 1 week, it's went the full other way, and I mean that makes it exciting because now it looks like, well, now they've got balance and options that they can create and put together. But I do want to say before we move on, St Johnstone are shit in the first half. It was only like the defensively, like this is the worst team for Rangers to play right now, St Johnstone, because they love doing what they've done, like that's their bread and butter as a team, but they couldn't keep the ball for a second and give themselves a rest at any point.
Rangers had 10 quarters by the 24th minute.
10 shots in 13 minutes. 10 shots.
But again, it's boring. It's boring talking about Rangers because at the moment,
But is this the end for Gio?
It should be.
Beginning of the end by the sounds of things, because they've still not done it.
But why? I would just do it now, and then you've got the World Cup to get someone in that can do something. I mean, I'm saying this, I think it's the third Monday in a row, or third Monday out of four, that they're just dead easy to play against at the moment. He's not, like, we criticise Warburton for not having a plan B. I mean, Van Bronckhorst barely has a plan A. Like, it's fallen apart. It's like you started to write the A-frame and then you've forgotten about it. Like,
he just looks like the least inspiring man as well for a team that's struggling. Like, the camera cuts to him. He just looks like he's about to start crying.
I mean, I think their entire season is kind of summed up by some of the things that happened yesterday. Like Lundström's then lead up to the first goal, like his awful pass, but then also just the not arseness of falling up. And then even, I hesitate to say, because it was a wonder strike, but Ryan Kent is not the fastest at closing that James Brown. Now, that maybe is a calculated risk because he doesn't score. Oh no, he has. But you can kind of, there's just something amiss there, and you know you don't want to get too.
Tavernier, there was about three people at fault to lead up.
I mean, Tavernier looks like a bit of a walking wounded and stuff like that. There seems to be something not right there, and I think that 7 points off the, like, they're not making this back.
I mean, if you're out there, if it's November and you're out of Europe, and not just out of the Champions League, you're out of Europe outright, and I'm going to put my neck on the line and say that the league's over. So it's in November, and I would say, in terms of things that Rangers fans care about,
two cups is
done. And the cups, I mean, cups, I know they've not won a lot in recent years, so last year's Scottish Cup was actually a big deal. It's still not going to be enough to... It takes too long for it to be enough to...
For Van Bronckhorst, it's not salvageable, but for a new manager to come in and gets a run at a semi-final and the Scottish Cup, which they should... Unless the draw goes against them, it should, like, all things being equal, it should be a Celtic Rangers. It's a failure win if you're not in the final. Like
Lundstrom, like, that was, I felt like the easy one to go through is the shite bag in this, and I mean, we can have a laugh with that. I mean, because they create the Rangers fans have created the character about him staring at folk or something, and that. And that he needs to be feared, and is like the big hard man in the middle of the park.
Scott Brown's school of hard man.
Yeah, and
actually hard. Yeah,
Scott Brown shaved his head, even though he wasn't bald, just to perpetuate the hard man sort of image. But Lundstrom, more than the shite bag, it wasn't a shite bag, it was selfish. It was selfish because you can tell by the way he's doing it. He drives with the ball, he's not getting enough options, and he starts getting himself frustrated, and the ball goes away. And rather than make the tackle, it's not because he's scared of the tackle. He wants to make, it's like he almost wants to make a point
from
it.
He's going in a huff.
And he's went in the huff, yeah, and that's when it becomes, like, as I said, a much more selfish thing. And then for him, cut the payback he gets from that bit of selfishness is absolutely massive, because it's the first time St. Johnstone get up the pitch in the entire half, and it's because of him. And then there's a comedy, a bit slap dash at the bottom, more laziness. It was almost like a disease that went through the team at that point, and then Brown's sort of taking advantage of that disease incredibly.
Right, so let's move on to our next game, and perhaps the game of the weekend, although there was plenty of contenders, as we've already talked about. It was a match at Tynecastle, the final fixture, chronologically, with Hearts winning 3-2, despite having a man sent off at 0-0. That's really a sentence I didn't imagine saying after George Grant was sent off, or ever, really. Hearts to do that with 10 men. Usually one of the teams that typically just kind of falls apart whenever they get a man sent off, but in this occasion, a lot of players really came to the fore. It was a cracking game at Tynecastle. The atmosphere was brilliant. Like, it's just
the time. Do you think there's a reason for that, or like because atmosphere at Tynecastle has not necessarily been a great thing this season?
I saw people saying Florence has been a big sort of bringing together between players and fans.
I think it's just giving the fans something to cheer about. Like, I've seen that Florence thing, and yeah, there maybe is something in that, but at the same time...
Sounds a bit romanticised.
Yeah. We had that in Riga as well, and we were still rubbish afterwards. Yeah. And the atmosphere was still crap. But if you think about the game since Florence, so that was the...
But maybe it's more that the players appreciated all that support despite the performance. So maybe there was like a bit of a mirror time, if you like, for the Hearts
for this game, really. I would just say the atmosphere was so good because of the red card.
Aye.
Because it changed the way that every fan looked at the match. Like,
became adversity you're up against. Yeah. There is an expectation that Hibs and Hearts fans wrongly have a lot of the time, is that they expect to win against your provincial team, sort of thing.
Because typically in a game like that against Motherwell, I would spend half the game talking to my dad and not paying full attention to what was going on in the park. And like, after the red card, we didn't really say much to each other because we're both just on the edge of our seat entire time, especially once Hearts go ahead. Because you're like, oh God, I can't throw this away. Can we keep on it? And it really felt like a game against Celtic or Rangers or against Hibs. Like, it felt like it was a real massive stakes riding on it. And that just made it, well, it wasn't, it also helped, it was five goals, a comeback, penalty drama,
an early winner. Getting away with a red card.
It's an absolute colossal result. I mean, I heard
third place is secure.
Yeah,
we get away with one red card, but I don't think the actual red card should have been a red card.
No, I agree. I don't think it was a red card.
I can totally see why it was given.
But Craig Gordon...
Because at the speed at which he goes into the challenge.
The thing is, Craig Gordon might get to the ball first, so it might not be a penalty either. But if it is a foul, you have to send them off, because it's a second yellow. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think he should have been booked for his first one, because I think Gordon, the captain's got every right to come out his box and talk to the referee.
Yeah, no, I was meaning the Grant one, I can see why it was given. And
so the goalie's not the captain, he shouldn't be allowed.
I think that's the point. Like, if a goalie runs that far to remonstrate with the referee, it's kind of seen as dissent. But he is the captain, so surely he should be allowed to do it.
Captains are allowed to treat the refs like shit. I'm learning new things every day.
No, it's like, it's more about like, well, if he said, it depends on what he said.
I do know what he said, I suppose.
Yeah. If he just comes screeching across, it's like, Clancy, you're a gun. Yeah, that yellow would definitely
cannot picture Craig Gordon behaving like that whatsoever.
But at least we've got a show name.
Clancy's a cunt. Give me any show from anywhere at any time.
A couple of standout performances in the Hearts team. Andy Halliday, obviously, 2 goals. And Andy Halliday is just a good player now. This year, it's just weird. I don't know where it's come from. But regardless of what position he seems to play in, he just seems to do a very good job.
Open goal. Becoming a podcaster makes you better, in fact. Everyone says it was going to make him shit. It's actually made him better.
Yeah, I'm Ewan Taylor told me that he's picking up legal clients all over the place now he's a podcaster.
But the best player on the park for me was Alex Cochrane, who was just imperious at the back. At centre-half, he was probably putting his best performance in a position that, like, just showed so much heart at it, because he clearly doesn't have the physical capabilities of your average centre-half. He must be about 5'9". And he's not particularly broad either, but he was winning headers. He was not putting a foot wrong. Then he goes to left back, and he has the charging run down the wing that eventually leads to the penalty.
The adverse. I mean, Cochrane's become one of Hart's best players, not just in a. And now he's become. Do you think sometimes when it's forced to do these things, like move into centre half, some players, they sink or swim at that, but he's now learning more and more, and he's becoming a more and more rounded player.
There is a learning process. He had a really bad month, I would say, with having to be put into centre half in a defence that was all over the place. But they have managed to settle themselves. Him and Toby Civic the last couple of games have been really quite solid together. And not again, sentences I never thought I'd say, but Civic, he was ball watching. He got caught ball watching a bit for the equaliser, and that's something that's really kind of a poor part of his game. But he overall had another decent afternoon as well. Fans singing. It's always so heartening whenever the fans are singing his name now. I'm like, aw. I don't know if he wants to be patronised in that way, but
I think from where he was,
patronised is good.
Ah, yeah, consider that. Patronised is a lot better than getting booed when you're coming onto the park.
Can we just talk about the fact that a new rule that I want to see introduced into the Premiership is if you score a goal as good as Kevin Van Veen did, even if it is offside, it should still count? Because
that was goal of the season stuff, man.
It's brilliant.
It's an absolute rifle.
It's an incredible finish.
Like, he could easily take a touch as well. Again, very Van Veen. Could take a touch and bring it in and shoot.
And then you're saying, no, that you were 6 inches off. Yeah. No, it overrules it. Like, it has to. It's the only way that we're going to...
You have a dubious goals panel. We now heard it's about how good the goal is. No, don't. People just stand well offside and just hit rad shots all the time everywhere. If you're offside, the whistle's going to go, flick it up and try and do an overhead kick to try and get the goal to count.
Tell me you wouldn't pay to go and see these games.
Yeah, I would certainly. I was going to say something about Nielsen. I mean, you're talking about adversity. It's something I'm going to come on to when I'm having a dig at Hibs later. But that Hearts, I've had quite a lot of adversity this season in various different guises. On the pitch, injuries, getting thumped in Europe. The way the fixtures lay meant that they were going quite long without wins at times and all that type of stuff. So it was a lot of things were working against them. And some of the fans were getting antsy about that, and Nielsen was taking a bit of stick again. I think Nielsen deserves a lot of credit for the fact that this team
plays for him.
Yeah, yeah, and they also seem to understand that their place in the food chain, so they don't allow the noise from the media or even their own fans, the results in these games that either they're not favourites in, to really muddy the waters or blur the lines for them when they come to playing the teams that they could beat. I mean, we had the Kilmarnock game, things went really badly and they managed to pull something out of that. The Ross County game, I mean, you spoke about it last week quite eloquently, but it was how quickly things went wrong and off the back of a shit result. Well, sorry, off the back of a good result, but still, come back to league, we've got these poor centre-halves in play against Jordan White, it all starting to, this is going to be bad, this is all going to work out bad. But they managed to make that work quite quickly. The reaction was quick. And then in this game, obviously, is the most adversity you'll ever see for a team to come back with. So the fact that Nielsen's got that mentality out of all of them as a collective, I mean, that deserves a lot of credit, surely, for a guy who's kind of not been getting credit.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I certainly wasn't part of the crew that wanted Nielsen gone. There was a bit of a malaise, but it was like, what I always said was, like, context just doesn't seem to count.
But sometimes it doesn't really count if it just sucks a player's confidence. But we can see now that there is still confidence in this team. They kept saying the entire time, you just didn't know whether to believe them or not, but they kept saying the entire time, we believe we're a good team, and once we get players back and once we don't have to be playing week like Thursday to Sunday and everybody getting injured in every single game, like, we will show what we're worth, and they're starting to do that. Something else, very just briefly before I want to get on to Bilbao before we move on to the next game.
Robert Snodgrass.
Yes.
Oh, what a shock.
Brilliant. He's actually brilliant. And it's still a bit mental that the club, well, I suppose the club maybe signed him thinking he's going to be a number 10 or play on the wing. But he's clearly not quite got the legs for that anymore. But it's weird that he's a number 8, because when he played against Celtic, I was like, he'll just get chased around the park. Like, but he was Hearts' best player.
You've got Devlin in there as well. You can afford. Yeah. Devlin could do the role of a couple of players. And so then you can actually just have someone who's just a bit quality, really.
Yeah, and Snodgrass is just all about quality. His awareness, his technique on the ball. Like, the way you can see as well, the way that he kind of leads the team, that his experience is very vital in the park as well. But yeah, to talk about Motherwell briefly, Motherwell looked... I think that Motherwell will be very disappointed with how little they pressured Hearts up until they made the formation change. So they went with their typical 4-3-3, but they were quite poor, really, for a lot of it. They didn't get a lot of space around about Hearts, but then they made the alteration, went to a 4-4-2 instead, Louis Moat coming on, and then all of a sudden they found a lot of kind of space in deep attacking areas in the Hearts side, and asked them a lot of questions, and obviously scored the two goals as well. Moat looked... fairly sharp to be, and I think he might... You'd be surprised if he's a Louis Moat of old, but it looks like somebody, based on that game, that I think could help Motherwell, yeah. Mm. But
I mean, I don't want to get it because I know I'm talking about Motherwell. They play 4-3-3 most weeks, and even though the results haven't been there all the time, performances have been pretty decent since Hamill came in, on the whole. Yeah. But I mean, like, 4-4... When you've got Moat and Van Veen against Kotkin and Sibic, if I'm a manager, I'm sitting there and going, do I want to just go that... From the start, I want to just ask these questions right away.
Moat was just back from an ankle injury, so maybe he couldn't have done 90 minutes.
Maybe it was always a plan for him to come in, but...
And Conor Shields is not the same.
Oh, man, Conor Shields. I thought Motherwell started quite well. They started really aggressively, and it's like just... And then it just stopped, and you see this a lot. And then it was like they played... teams playing stages, and I do totally understand that, but it was like night and day. Like in the first half, especially when Hearts went down to 10 men, you thought, right, that'll give them a boost. It actually looked like it worked against them. Mm-hmm. And not just about, this isn't me, and I'm not talking about from Hearts' point of view that they got galvanised by anything like that. I mean, purely Motherwell, like, looked like it sort of shocked them, the whole thing, that suddenly, and maybe it's just because, maybe something when you're asked, the game changes and you're being asked to do more as a side than maybe what you've prepared for, because it looked like they didn't have any idea how it take advantage of that whatsoever, that suddenly, right, the opportunity for us to be on the front foot. But I do like watching Van Veen and Shields play together, because Van Veen just tries to do everything, and it's like he just wants to punch it off, like kick it off Shields' legs occasionally and get it back and run around and get him, because he's got no interest in playing alongside him, no interest whatsoever.
Right, let's move on to our next game, which we shall go to the Highlands for Ross County. A massive win for them that takes them off the bottom of the table. 3-2 over St Mirren, who continue to be absolutely fucking guff away from home and concede a boatload of goals as well. Duncan, you watched this one. How was it?
It was possibly the worst of the 3-2 games over the weekend. It's quite remarkable to be like, oh, there's a 5-goal game, and it wasn't really up to much. Like, I don't know, like it was a strange one, but that's the first time County have scored more than one goal in a game since East Fife in the League Cup. But in the league since a 3-1 win in February over St Johnstone.
Wow.
So that indicates...
Good start, mate. Good start.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just leave now. but it was weird because I'd listened to Stephen Robinson's interview before I'd watched the game, because I was out walking the dog and stuff like that, and he talked about the fact that all three goals that St Mirren concede come from like personal errors and things like that, and individual mistakes. And when I watched it, I was like, this seems a bit more like a systems failure for each of these goals than like a glaringly obvious mistake. I think that Ross County have a game plan, which is to utilize the guys out wide where possible. But it was just a pretty odd game. Lottery was at the heart of everything. Ross County, I think
he's just coming to the team as well.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be if Ross County have an ambitions of doing anything other than finishing 11th, then I think that he's going to be the one that they play through.
Because they do seem to just... I don't know if this is fair, because I've not checked this, but I've always thinking, I feel like they play a difference two players in centre midfield every single week. It's never the same players. They just Tilson, Cancola, and then I saw Lottery, which is like interesting to see another player come in.
Callahan's usually in the middle.
Callahan, yeah. And it never looks like the same. And then last season it was, what's his name?
Harry Payton
and that. Just every time I look, it's like, it's never the same two. Every time I look,
I suspect that Mackay doesn't know what he wants, or he doesn't like what he's getting on a consistent basis, and so keeps switching up in the hope that he's going to hit upon something. But at the same time,
he wants society to be like the 50s again, is what he wants.
But as you said, that sometimes like necessity is the mother of invention, isn't it? Cochrane playing at the back, like and Sibic and stuff, like, you sometimes you're forced into doing something, and actually having too much choice is can be a bit of a problem. And I think that is definitely the case. I think that he probably just needs to settle on where he's going to be playing people for a while. And I think that you get the quality that you can get off Lottery to Jordan White, you know, I would be amazed. I think they'll be trying that a lot tomorrow night. But again, it was a strange game, because, like I said, it wasn't particularly exciting. It was open, and both teams were quite happy to cede possession a lot of the time.
Leaving the ball in the middle.
Just running around.
So there was a lot of, like, needless passing, and then they'd get a bit bored and just like lump it into the corner and like chase after it, and then cede possession. So I don't know, like, it was, yeah, I mean, I think Curtis Main had a good game up front, but
that seems to happen quite a lot.
I know, but I think that
it's quite troubling.
On the face of it, didn't have a good game as well, if you know what I mean. But lot of the ball that he's getting into him are bad balls. Like people are saying, oh, he's got a terrible touch. I didn't think that a lot of time. I think he was being given a lot of bad options, and he was still trying to make it work, which, you know, some other strikers might go and just, well, I'm not bothered chasing that, or, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to bother try control it and just moan at the players. He didn't do that, so that was an aspect I like. But given that St. Mirren went in at halftime 2-1 up, I was really expecting them to come out the second half and just even just try and suffocate County, because that's a team. County are all low on confidence, as we said. They've not scored that many, and then they just kind of nothinged it. And I thought I was a bit worrying if you're Stephen Robinson, because you are getting a tune out of these players at home. But yeah, just away from home, they seem to stink the joint. And that's two weekends in a row I've watched them and been utterly unimpressed by what is they're doing.
Oh, they're absolutely rubbish at Easter Road.
It's like the midfield kind of, like, I really want to like players like Erhon and stuff like that, but I'm just not doing it enough to make it worth your while to think.
I mean, they should never be out of a game when you've got Backus and Erhon and O'Hara, because there's a lot of blend and balance and a lot of things that you want for your team. Baldwin, I thought, was quite poor for the strain free kick. He just tried to make up for his own mistakes.
No, not as poor as Ross Laidlaw.
Baldwin had gone down 5 minutes in with a bit of injury, so he was. He was off pretty quickly after that.
I like Baldwin and Iacovitti as a pair. I just think they're both nice players. And talking of centre halves, Joe Shaughnessy. What's going on? Because Gogic has never been a good centre half.
No,
that's why you pushed him into midfield at the start.
The thing is, I think Gogic could be quite a good sweeper if you properly play him.
It's not 1992, so you can't do that. You're fucking saucy turned up at Hibs. It's like you're not allowed to just play. I mean, Declan Gallagher, Dunn, and Shaughnessy sounds really fucking good to me. Really, I mean, Dunn didn't cover himself in glory for Jordan White's goal either. I mean, he's just completely
just
asleep.
Lost him,
yeah. And I hate that nothing annoys me more really than when a back three does that, because you're like, there's fucking loads of you. You've got that's the whole point. If people are just able to ghost him in the back, it's like Jordan White's. That can be a sneaky player. I mean, you're going to know that Jordan White's about and what he's doing. So, there was a lot of poor defensive thing, and with Laidlaw for the other goal as well.
He could do better for both of them.
I think he could as well. I
don't know if he can do any more, but he just looks rubbish.
That's a big problem with Laidlaw in general. There always just
the first one, he's either set up his wall wrong or he's got his positioning wrong. Like, but either way, he's like
quite a lot of goalies like this, because if we talk, I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit of Gaetti as well. I mean, it's great. But they don't look like goalkeepers. even when they make saves.
Even when they're wearing gloves.
Even when they make saves, it just never looks right. It's like more like when your pal goes in goals in fives. And does all right, you know, but you're never convinced that it's going to be like an ongoing weekly thing that they're going to be good. So, yeah, there's a lot of goalkeepers in this league that are just extremely unconvincing.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, let's move on to our next 3-2 game. Incredible sentence. Which took place at Kilmarnock as Livingston won 3-2. I watched this one.
This looked fun.
It was quite fun. It still wasn't as good as the Hearts game, but it was so for the way you've described the Killy described the county match, probably sits number two in the ranking of 3-2 victories from this past weekend. Livy, I thought, they deserved the of the two sides. I thought they made the ball stick a lot better in attack, and it's just kind of, you look at the personnel,
much better team. A much better team.
Bruce Anderson came in at the side. He's somebody that's I think we've been a bit confused as to why he's not been playing as much. I know that Livy fans certainly have. They reckon he should be getting more opportunities than he has been. And yeah, fair enough. Joel Newbley's been excellent when he's played through the centre, and you probably want him through the centre as opposed to out on the left wing. But at the same time, at other points when they've played Newbley wide, they've brought in other players instead.
You're like, yeah, that boy they signed for India has played a bit as well.
Yeah, but Bruce Anderson is just better than these other guys. But
it kind of demonstrated that pretty early on.
He played Shinny up front at times as well.
Yeah, I don't know if there was any kind of disagreement between him and Martindale or something, but it's quite weird considering he was our top goal scorer last season. And
the 13 was fucking good. He was
undoubtedly one of the best players as well. But he was just great at being a real nuisance. And you see, his entire day's work could probably be summed up with his part in the winning goal, where he has the confidence to run at these two Killy players. He gets the ball taken off him, but he doesn't gee up. He goes after it. He harries him. He wins the ball back. Then he plays a brilliant kind of link-up part with a great pass for Montano, was it? Mm-hmm. For the cross, and then Stokes puts it in the back of the net.
He
did look very good.
He did something that we've all done at fives, but you were hoping that cameras don't capture. Like, there's that thing where you're in slow motion, your feet are just wedded to you, and you're like, you've got, like, and you look back and you're like, you've got time. You don't have to do this right now.
You can take a touch and turn and switch it. Stokes was I put him in my fantasy team right before it. It was either him or Wright. And I was debating it for ages, and I was like, I just thought, because Stokes can play
a Joe fullback
as well, I was like, oh, maybe he'll be more likely, like, guaranteed, because they chop and change the defence a bit, Kilmarnock at times, and obviously we're back three and a back four and stuff, and then I like Joe scored two. Stokes gives away a penalty and then scores the most comical own goal you'll ever see. Just before we move and talk about other things, Deutsch is so finished that now he can't get a game even when Lafferty's not there.
Yeah.
And it's Innes Cameron, who's like pretty roundly thought of as
championship.
He can move.
He can move.
And that is really what the difference is here, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is the difference to the two sides. Livy made the ball stick up front, because not only have you got Newbley and Anderson, we've got Bitsendow, who is like diet Joel Newbley.
Like, he's like Bamba Bula.
There's an old Bitsendow.
I thought Bamba Bula played.
Oh, did he? Hang on.
You might be from...
What's happening now is two men with laptops are tapping away.
Google.
It's my game on. I'm sure it was... I've got here that it was Bamba Bula that played right wing.
Oh, you're right, actually. Yeah. Sorry. Was he the player I was thinking of anyway? Have I just got Livy players mixed up?
I think so. Great radio.
I know, just me.
But you just carry on with your point.
Just me confused. But anyway, he was kind of
it's
like,
wrong, but carry on with your point.
Have I... Where's the...
Sorry, I should just let you go.
Up. Who's the other guy?
Well, Isma came on later, but you know him. He's played for...
Oh, Bitsendow's on loan at Arbroath. Is this the guy?
They even play for Livingston. And this is what you pay your hard-earned Patreon money for.
I might have got these mixed up. Anyway, he played similar kind of Joel Newbley style, like slow plodding, but ball seems to stick to him, and he got quick feet as well. So there's three guys that can make the ball stick in attack, whereas Killy, Innes Cameron, no. And they really didn't get much out of the supporting players in this game. Rory McKenzie ran around, but didn't really do anything effectively. Daniel Armstrong.
Heard that before.
Daniel Armstrong was pretty pish. He did not have a good game. And Jordan Jones got into it a bit in the second half. But the first half, he was really not in the game much. And the only time that he actually kind of got the ball and drove at the Livingston defence, Kelly won a corner from it. Kelly's only really main consistent source of attack in this game was Abelosi attacking for right back. When he got forward, things happened, and that was including winning the corner for the opening goal.
That doesn't sound great.
I'd be a bit worried if I was Kelly, because they've finally got Armstrong and Jones on the park together, which has been something they've been waiting on. And I know a lot of the Kelly fans were really looking forward to that, because they've had to play three at the back at times. As you're saying, relying, there's been periods where you thought these fullbacks were their only sort of outlet is creativity. And obviously you had Lafferty up front, which is good. But now they've got those two on the park and lose Lafferty.
Strikers.
Yeah, and it just like really seems... I've been saying it the whole time. I really, really worry about Kilmarnock. I just don't. They frankly just don't like their team.
I just want to make a correction. I actually remember who Bitson Dow is now. He's the absolutely huddy defensive midfielder that as soon as I watched him with Wyscott, I was like, I don't think you're any good. So no, I just got them two confused. Baham Bulla is the guy I did when I watched him. When I watched him with Wyscott, I was like, he just looks like Joel Newbley. I got terrified there. I just completely mixed them apart. But I just got the wrong name. Our both have got a rubbish defensive midfielder then. I don't think there's anything more to say about this, guys.
No. I think it's a huge big result. It's been big results for a lot of teams this week. I mean, Ross County, that was a fucking massive result because they really needed to be putting points on the board at some point, because they've been losing a lot. And I was starting to think, I'm not convinced by any of these signings.
If you're Ross County, you start to think Dundee United can't be this bad all season.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then you've got Livingston, who sort of dropped out of bottom six, were coming into ninth, and a lot of that early season work, I think that's been undone now. And then they get a win away from home. Kilmarnock, big weekend for them, where they've got these players on the park, but they're not producing, and their home form was what was keeping them sort of heads above water. There'll be a bit of confidence lost there. They've got Hibs next week. I know Hibs are a great away from home, but it's a tough game for Kilmarnock regardless. Hibs have a good side. Kilmarnock can easily be bottom of the league. Yeah. Dundee United are playing them tomorrow, and they can be easily bottom of the league.
The problem is a lack of talent.
The team's not good.
It's a championship team.
With Armstrong and Jones, it's like everything's going to lie on them. And I mean, I think Temple said it on one of the shows he was on, Alan Temple, but at least they'll have the second half of the season Kyle Lafferty back by the time his ban runs out. And that might be the thing that helps them, but I think they'll need to spend something in January, because they didn't really bring in a lot in the summer either. The team just looks the same. Donnelly and Power, it's like Donnelly's just like a poor version of Power. So there's no real blend there or anything. And even just don't like it.
Yeah, even Doidge wasn't they needed.
Yeah, like, it's a fucking crap signing. He's been fucking crap for about 6 months. I love Doidge. I love him. He was one of my favourite players now, but he's the most finished player he's ever finished.
He's washed.
Aye. He's dusted, I think the kids say. I don't know, I can't keep up with all just the phrases I see on Twitter and just accept them.
Aye, he slaps.
Doyle said he doesn't slap anymore. I was he was a policeman.
Let's get to a team who won at the weekend whose fans are massive fans of yours truly. That is Celtic, who defeated Dundee United 4-2 at the weekend with conceding a late equaliser yet again. And somehow finding the way to victory despite it looking like they were going to drop points. They've done it against St Johnstone, they've done it again here, and
they just do it for a laugh.
They may as well.
Clearly
the best team in this league.
And they're just teams like people who play Call of Duty trying to find a new difficulty level because they're so bored of playing it. Ridiculously fucking hard, or whatever it is. They say impossible level where you can only kill people by headshots.
Or giving away dubious penalties.
Yeah. what do you say about this?
More interesting than I expected that the Celtic versus Dundee United be. Like, I think you have to give Dundee United a modicum of credit for that.
I think they played pretty well, and the first goal was a really sloppy one to give away. We were kind of looking at Kieran Freeman.
That done my head in, man.
But he gets burned by Jota because he tries... United look like they're going to win the ball back, and he starts to sprint forward as if to help launch a counter attack. But it's like 5 minutes at the Celtic Park. Just maybe just stay back a wee bit.
But also that comes from Fletcher being pressured by three different Celtic players. Like that is that. He got the heat put on him. I don't think it was necessarily his fault losing possession like that when you have three players around you.
It was more like, I think it was either Bieg or maybe Bieg who was on the left hand side. So it was more. I was more, when I was watching, the thing that angered me was Celtic, we all know, the wide player who plays on the separate side for Jota always makes runs from outside to in, right? I mean, everyone knows that. I mean, Abada's, that's been his main tool since he's come into to Scottish football. So when I was watching this, Haksabanovic makes out an in run so early, so early. Like, I understand, because if you're Dundee United, if you're any team playing Celtic, that's something you're pinpointing during the week, right? That's going to happen over there. So if you're playing on that side, especially when you've got McMahon and Bieg playing on the same side as a duo, as a five at the back, we need to be looking out for that at all times. I accept it when it's just before, if the wide player makes the run just before the cross and they time it all perfectly. But Haksabanovic does it like so long before, gets in front, Bieg can see him, he jogs back, and this is like their main sort of, their bread and butter style of scoring a goal for Celtic.
He's just a crap defender.
He is. He's just no interest and he doesn't like it. And then he Haksabanovic there just to knock it in. And it's just like, that's so frustrating if you're at Dundee United, because I can guarantee they worked on that all week, that would be a main source of Celtic scoring. He does it right away, and Haksabanovic does the run so early, way before it even gets out to Jota. He's already in the position to score that goal. And it's just like, fucking come on.
Was that a penalty?
No.
I thought it was.
I think by the rules it is.
I mean, it's by the rules, but
it's a stupid rule.
But this, I
hate it. If it happens, I'll be fucking fuming.
Yeah, I'm now on the stage where I like, it's not a penalty in the way that I like football to be played, which is now, but probably not the way to do it. And it was, it's not a penalty. I'm not saying that, but no one. Unless not a single Dundee United player thinks it's a penalty.
Unless your arm is tucked unless you're Michael Smith, apparently. Well, that's always going to be a penalty.
I mean, there's going to be a case in point for signing armless footballers soon enough. Like, it's
ex-war veterans. Quinn's in.
But
people in Iraq just like, I know what I'm going to do when I get home.
SPFL Championship. I think this is the problem that I have a lot with the time with VAR, is that it takes stuff like that. I remember first seeing it in like the Champions League when Spurs made it to the final and the goal got called off last minute. Yeah, like for offside. Like, there was not a single Spurs player thought that was offside. Mm-hmm. No one called for it. There was not that. That's football. It's purest.
Like, challenge flags. We're going to do VAR. Let's have challenge flags.
But,
come on. Okay,
but that's my issue. Is that if you on the park don't think there's an obvious foul, then like let's not involve the technology. We don't need that.
It takes away all context, VAR as well. And it's
what we're going to talk about in the other
game. Yeah, I mean, but the one thing, I hate VAR. I think I've been very, very vocal about that and on various medias that we do together for the terrace. But I'll be a bit devil's advocate now. I mean, is it a surprise that we have the most goals we've ever had?
Because I think that you cannot. I think that's I think that's.
Oh, we did have.
Because it adds. Maybe there's an idea that it gives penalties that are penalties. That's the first thing it does. But also, Scottish football sort of thrives on chaos. That's our favourite thing. And VAR creates a lot of chaos. And then there's players out there that I think emotionally get drained from all the things that are going on, and they aren't really at the level
mistakes are made.
to cope to it. So they're all starting to make mistakes. I don't know. Maybe it is adding just more chaos, and they're just going to be bonkers games all the time. But that doesn't necessarily mean good games.
No, I don't. Yeah,
and that's another thing. I think I've given VAR such a kick in that I thought I would maybe try and do something for a laugh about trying to say maybe it's doing something fun.
I think so far the stats show that it's actually led to an increase in goals, but it's very early days. It's such a small sample size because we've had lots of instances of penalties being given that maybe wouldn't have been given otherwise, but we've not really had many instances of goals being disallowed that were originally allowed to stand for like offside, or we've only had one so far where a foul in the build-up meant it didn't count. So we might start to see more then. We might start to see goals getting taken off. But early days, yeah, it is actually providing more goals. But I still hate it.
I don't think that's good enough reason.
But I thought we'd only be fair for a podcast where we're all anti-VAR. Yeah. There isn't one person for that because it's a fans podcast. Everyone hates it. But I thought it would bring some sort of... So maybe create some sort of ointment.
So should we do this thing we should do every Dundee United game and talk about how shit the keeper is at 2-1? Like, my notice is, what a fucking rubbish keeper.
He's got, they've scoured, I think it was Tom Watt maybe said this in the group chat, someone there, like, it's impressive they managed to scour the earth to find two goalies that are below what your normal Scottish second choice goalie would be. Yeah, this is an extremely good point because these are like both left field goalkeepers they managed to bring in.
But it's usually a good source for United.
I better get it. You've got, they have to go and buy a goalie in January. They have to.
It's such a pathetic attempt to keep that one out. It's like he's kind of be arsed. Like, I'll just put my hand there. Oh, it's fine. It's gone in.
So weak wristed. It's just, it's all the time. It's starting to move away from confidence. And it is. It just doesn't look right. That one he saves near the end, you know, when he tips it around the post. Looks shit. He looks shit. Like I said, it's like it's hitting off like he's fucking biceps.
The header from Carter Vickers.
Yeah.
He should save that. That shouldn't even be a corner. And all it does is put more pressure on.
But I love it. The Dundee United defender goes over and pats him on the back. Right, thank God. Right, okay. We got through that one.
One thing about Dundee United I noticed for this game is that Steve Fletcher's still really good at holding the ball up, and there's just nobody to stretch the opposing team. They really need to sign somebody with pace, like genuine pace and attack, who's good enough to play.
I just say Jum.
Weird signing.
I would really like to see Levitt and Fletcher link up a bit more. I think there's potential. There's a dynamic there that could work, but Levitt's been really off it. I mean, so has. Is much of the team, so it's not really.
Was it a 3-5-2 they started with? With McGrath kind of up front with Fletcher?
Yes.
So even then, they still won't give the Fletcher Watt partnership a chance. Even when I don't understand. What was the point? I don't get it. Like, surely now we've got this system, let's give it a try at some point. And still, nah. No doubt to see them both playing together. Similar to the May and Clark one. I mean, I think they're both relatively intelligent players that maybe they'll work off well each other.
Admittedly, it would be a brave manager that would start Stephen Fletcher and Tony Watt away at Celtic Park.
We're going to play two up front. Why not Watt instead of McGrath?
Because McGrath might actually chase people.
He doesn't do a lot of that from what I see. Fair play to Dundee United, and I think the manager has made a difference. There's no doubt about that. They've not been beat 9-0 yet, so straight away he's done something well.
It may be a heartbreaking defeat, but at least he didn't get beaten 9-0.
But they'll need a fair few. They've just still got these huge gaping holes that you're saying pace. They've still not got the defensive midfielder. They went and bought Zoom, but they've still not got the defensive midfielder that they need. So, and I, like we're saying with Kilmarnock, there's teams down the bottom.
They're carrying a big squad as well, and nowhere to. Who's going to take any of that? Like the stuff that you want, the stuff that you want to send away to people. Nah.
None of us really anything to say about Celtic. Another kind of disappointing game for David Turnbull, who's starting to think, like, maybe do you need a move? He's the one player that's just kind of...
The standard just went up so high.
Yeah, and he's not really improved under Ange, I would say. Mm-hmm. Especially not to the degree that a lot of other players did.
Yeah, he doesn't have the work rate to be an Ange central midfielder.
And can we just give a little bit of plaudits to Abada's finish? I love that.
Oh yeah, really nice.
It was like the build up was like someone had just pressed R1 on the controller, and he was just like, "See it," and then like you're like, "Oh, it's gonna," and then he just just a beautiful finish.
Sort of the most, probably the most deadly player in that type of scenario. He's like, probably has like the most deadly finisher in the league. I sometimes think about that, like the sort of different ways that he scores goals. I always back him when I see him running in. I think this guy's because he does have things lacking in his game, and I think you saw that in the Champions League. Because obviously we've always been so Abada-pilled, I think, everyone, because he's so fucking good at 20 years old and he's comes in. But you can see the things that are maybe a bit lacking from his game, like his ability to run with the ball isn't quite good, and maybe when to release the ball at that level. But in terms of just like when it comes to like one-on-one or running out the back post and just pure finishing and movement. The guy's top notch. And if he's looked after properly, he could go the full distance as a player.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right, let's get to our last game, which sometimes in these podcasts, our last game, as we have always liked to do in the terrace, is tradition to have a 0-0 as our last game. Well, this one had 5 goals. It came up at Aberdeen as the Dons weathered a wee bit of a first-half storm, I would maybe say. I know the Hibs didn't create too many chances, but they had a lot of the ball, and Aberdeen really couldn't get their half for a lot of it. They get a debatable penalty on the I was going to say the stroke of half time, but then it was about another 10 minutes afterwards of injury
great
time.
Bar, that's what I'm worried about tomorrow night, is whether I'm going to make my bus. Like, genuinely, I'm starting to
like, oh, like, can't wait till Duncan Thomas, I didn't say your spare room, mate.
And then Aberdeen just run all over Hibs in the second half. And again, it's another example in the litany of examples over decades of Hibs facing adversity and not standing up to it.
I think it's because when players come out the womb, they're terrified of going to places like Aberdeen.
So you should pull on the green, is that it?
I'm so close to being done with this idiot.
You've been done with it before he came in.
I know, to be fair. Yeah, that is. He was always on the sticky wicket.
You're moving into the agenda period, which means that your words don't hold as much value. Now you have to. I do this. You have to watch sometimes because you don't want to be. Because then basically everything just doesn't matter because you're just a full on critic. But have fun, like, don't get me wrong.
But he's talking a lot. I mean, he's talking the right things about like trying to change the mindset of the club and all these different approaches. And the thing is, it's not working so far.
Yeah, the mindset stuff annoys me because you prove you've changed mindsets. Because it's demonstrated, and I think that's the issue, is that he talks a lot, and I think that's natural. Like, it's just who he is as a personality, but you've got to back that up. And what's intriguing to me, but he's always been a streaky manager. Like, you know, he holds the record number of defeats for Oldham and Bristol City, and I think record number wins one of those at Sunderland as well. So like that, but that's clearly like not that's a feature now of how he plays or his management style. And so I'm curious as to how.
If you don't draw many games, you can get a lot. You can go far in this league if you win.
But again, it's the whole thing is that all of this has just been a huge missed opportunity. We're going to go into the World Cup and Hearts are right in the mix, and this was really. And we always said that it was always going to be difficult, that Hibs and Aberdeen would potentially cut each other's throats to get ahead. But what's happened is actually Hibs have done, when it's a big game, Hibs aside from Celtic have done all right. I mean, even you could take a 4-1 defeat to Aberdeen, really.
St Johnstone, Dundee United.
Yeah, that's Livy away, St Mirren away. Like, you know, not even just taking points from them, that can be disappointing. You can be disappointed taking points from those games, but it's when you lose those games and don't really seem like you've got an answer as to why you're not winning them.
Livy, St Johnstone, Dundee United, Hibs should have won quite comfortably, but I think this comes back into the, well, maybe Livingston not comfortably, but there was a period in the second half where Hibs were
absolutely dominant.
Again, this the adversity thing comes up. Dundee United, Hibs having a perfectly good goal chopped off, adversity and a decision.
Aye, St Johnstone, basically, what happens?
The red card, team fucking collapses. I mean, you see Hearts going there, and it's obviously like just all hands on deck, but there's nothing to panic about. Especially Hibs in that position, they still could have won that game quite easily.
I still thought Hibs should win because St Johnstone had done nothing to that point.
And then obviously in this game, right on the stroke of half time, something going against you. And that's a really worrying trend, because there was a discussion about Hibs' mentality at the start of the season because there was lots of last minute winners, but that's different. When you're still in a game and you're pushing, it's a different type of mentality.
Absolutely.
Than adversity when decisions go against you in a game and you're in a huff and you're angry about it. And so I'm very worried about that, because I think the team's good. The thing I most dislike about Johnstone is he rates himself, right? He rates himself highly. He's a deep thinker in the game. He likes to try and affect the game, which is a good thing on the whole. We've seen it melt down the subs in the first half, stuff like that. This game, there's boils out that we've just won a game 3-0. Juhan's there. It's the most like-for-like replacement you could possibly get. The team doesn't have to change, but Iwen wants to go in with the dual tens, with McGuinness and Henderson. And I find this tough to criticise, because the first half, Hibs really were in control of that game in a way that I didn't expect at Pittodrie. I mean, the Aberdeen fans were
Aberdeen have been at, yeah.
So it's, I'm finding it tough because I'm looking at tactically probably got that right, and Hibs had probably the most control I've possibly ever seen us have in a period for such a long period at Pittodrie. But then what's he saying at half time when that happens, because the team completely capitulates in the second half, and it's
you can't get free headers.
Criminal goal to lose. And I just think Aberdeen were awful in the first half, like properly horrific, but fair play to them. Once the going, which I think a feature of Aberdeen's players, when the going gets good, they really fill their boots.
They do, aye.
The inverse Hibs or whatever.
Aye, once they've got a bit of advantage, they just seem to run all over.
I think they are this year's flat track bullies. Like they are. Like they, if they get an advantage, they're just going to steamroller their way over teams, and that will. Probably for most of the season be enough.
Like, they struggle to really kind of control games and maintain a lot of possession in the matches where they're kind of still 0-0. And I do wonder that about Goodwin, because St Mirren, he got the job off the back of what he'd done at St Mirren, and that was a team that didn't really want the ball and was more kind of set up defensively. So I wonder whether he, because if you look at the players they've got on their side, and they should be dictating possession, they should be controlling games, because there's enough quality there on the football in the middle of the park to do that, but they don't do it.
But I mean, Aberdeen were were worse than St Mirren at Easter Road the last time around.
The game at Easter Road.
The game at Easter Road, that was one of the worst teams I've seen, and yet they've turned it around, and it's 4-1.
Putting Duke up front alongside Miowski, that's a very good partnership.
It's brilliant. The blend is perfect, and Duke's a better footballer than Miowski. Miowski's a better finisher than Duke, and Duke's a diver. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not one of those that blows up.
You're a Hibs fan. You've got Martin Boyle in your team.
Was a dive. He didn't say he was a diver.
Well, I mean, I think in the Rangers game the week before, he was flopping about. I think against Hearts, he was taking tumbles. In the second half against Hibs, even when he gets clipped, it's always
there. That free kick he wins. It's a free kick, but he still dives.
I'm not never one to preach at these things. I'm accepting that football is how it is. So players are all looking for advantage. Ryan Porteous likes to get an advantage sometimes. I mean, we've all seen it. These players exist all around the pitch. I mean, Phil, you're a Hearts fan. I mean, you watch Stephen Presley do for years. So we've got this all going around the pitch. People get more frustrated about the forward players because they're winning games. Changing moments, but Duke's because before that you're struggling to see Aberdeen win that game. But Duke's all action; he's so much better than you possibly. At first, he looked really, really raw, but he picks up the ball, he drives, takes quite a lot of responsibility, and he's aggressive as a forward. He just wants to be involved, and he's got pace, touch. He can actually go into the air. So I think that was a really, really good find. And lucky for Aberdeen because he spent £1 million on two strikers, and when you do that, they have to be good. They have to be good.
Right, do we have anything else to say, or will that do us for this show?
Goodwin, does it seem that as a touchline ban? He's literally just shouting at the players for the front, like doing it. I thought I was laughing at it, but it's bizarre. Like, it just, surely you're not allowed to sit there. You're just, basically, you're just 2 feet above the dugout. You're just as close, but whatever.
Actually, he's probably got a better chance of reaching the
player. He can make his voice go further in that position. But I like the people grassing, all my favourite. The SFA. I don't think anyone cares, man.
Right, that'll do us. Thank you very much for listening to this show. And if you would like to hear more from us, check out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/terracepodcast. We're not doing one because we are recording quite late on a Monday evening for typically what we do. So we'd like to stop now and to go on with our lives. But there is a
podcast. As pathetic as they are. So what are you involved in them?
But there was a podcast that went up earlier today. It was the very worst of Danny Lennon's time in charge of Clyde, the final podcast in that three-part trilogy that we did.
Get him in drams.
Yes.
Twitter guy.
Yes, it certainly is. Scott Russell as well, very good first time guest.
I listened to the first part on the drive over here and I very much enjoyed it.
I'm gonna give it a listen. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it was quite interesting to learn more about Clyde, who lost again at the weekend. So that's them now lost 11 games in the spin.
Yeah, why not?
But David Goodwill, it's all forgiven. Come back.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was a trial.
Maybe they were right.
Trialist for Livingston United at the weekend.
He scored a couple, I think.
Yeah.
So, check that out. And that's it from us. Until Thursday, we'll be back again with another Premiership Roundup. It won't be us, but it will hopefully, unless something goes wrong, be another three people in person.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
Like, sit in my living room twiddling my thumbs.
I mean, you sitting in your living room drinking cans.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. So there must be football on of some description.
We'll find something.
Oh, man, you're going to have to go out again.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.